Good evening. I'd like to call the meeting for September 3rd, 2013 of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members. Mrs. McBean Claiborne. Mr. McKenna.
Here.
Mr. Proto.
Here.
Ms. Pryor.
Here.
Mr. Robison.
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa. Mr. Stein.
Here.
Mr. Burbank.
Here.
Ms. Chak.
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis.
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. Mackesy?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
With 13 members present. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. Communications are on the desks.
I would like to ask for an executive session at the end of this legislature meeting for a personnel issue. And I'm going to be juggling the agenda order of resolutions to try to accommodate our staff and guests, although there are a lot of you here, so some people are going to have to wait. So we'll do our best. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to address the legislature? All right. Any municipal officials here who would like to speak? Mr. Klein? All right, thanks, Dan. Anyone? All right, legislators. I knew it.
Couldn't escape, Martha.
Frank.
I just want to remind you again of a couple of upcoming events. On Sunday, the 15th, Ithaca College is having their annual DeWitt Park Music in the Park. This is a gift to the community, and you're all welcome to pass the word around to anyone in the community. And I keep reminding you of this one, the watch fire out in Lansing at Myers Point is the 20th. The actual ceremony gets started around 7, but if you come a little bit earlier while it's still light, you can actually see each other. It's always a nice event, and it's well received. And once again, I'd like to thank the town of Lansing for hosting it. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. Pam Nanduli?
Yes, on Sunday, September 9th, we will have our annual brunch on South Hill welcome the students to Ithaca. And we have food is provided by Ithaca College, and it's a neighborhood event for anybody who lives on South Hill or the South Hill area or used to live on South Hill or loves South Hill and would like to live on South Hill. We welcome people. But it's a very nice event. And the students, it's late enough in the morning, so they can get up and come. So it's really a very nice way for the students and the neighbors to interact.
Thank you, Pam. Dooley, Peter, then Carol.
Back when we all first had a chance to comment to DEC on concerns we had about their fracking EIS, one of the things I mentioned was silica dust. It was not a topic that other people addressed, but it's something I'm familiar with because of silicosis, which you get from breathing in silica dust. It's not a lesser threat than asbestos that you can inhale. And the reason I'm mentioning it tonight is at the end of last week, the Obama administration has finally introduced new rules to govern exposure to silica dust. The old ones have been in place for more than 40 years, the old OSHA rules. And with oil and gas development, there are now so many more workers exposed. Fracking takes millions of gallons of water and hundreds of tons of very fine sand. So I'm very pleased that at the federal level, they're moving forward with this protection, and that probably means New York State's health analysis, even if it doesn't address this directly, it will be covered by the feds now.
What do you mean covered by the feds?
There'll be federal regulations to guide exposure to workers and anybody in the area.
On that one issue?
On that one issue of silica dust, yes. That's all this is silica right. dust.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie. Peter, Carol, Pam?
A couple of months ago, I gave a little presentation at this group about a calculation I had made starting from the Environmental Protection Agency's most recent report on global warming gases. And if you recall, starting with that data, I calculated how I calculated the comparison between natural gas and coal for producing electricity, and came up with a number that that was that natural gas is about half as much, produces half as much global warming gas for an equivalent amount of electricity. I passed around this graph to show that. And at the meeting, someone, or perhaps more than one of you, asked me whether I had contacted Bob Howarth and discussed it with him, and I said I had not. And after thinking about it for a while after that meeting, I thought it was a good point, and that I then made an appointment with Bob Howarth to talk to him. It took a while to get a time that was convenient for both of us, but I spoke to him, I don't know, maybe a month ago, something like that. So I just want to report on that conversation and that what I did subsequent to that conversation. We talked together for about 40... we talked together for... How do you... What, why is...
Step away,
okay. I talked to him for about 45 minutes, and I'm going to say, I mean, I can't quote him reliably on anything because I didn't write down anything and I was having a conversation and not, you know, interviewing a person. But he seemed uninterested in the result that I had, and he said that he thought it must be wrong because he had investigated it and he had a very different answer. And in discussing, and I try to find out from him exactly what it was that in the calculation I had made that was wrong, and there was no clear answer to that. And I think that the way that I can only way I can summarize this, and I want to again emphasize that this is not a quotation. I'm not quoting him. It was just a conversation that went sort of back and forth and around. I had the distinct impression that the reason why he was not interested in the result that I achieved was because, and again, I want to emphasize that this is just an impression I had from various things he said, that he believed that the numbers that were quoted by the Environmental Protection Agency, from which I was deriving the result that I was presenting, were... incorrect and consciously incorrect. And so that's all I can say. So I end up with the result, which is the thing that I stated at the time, that either Bob Howarth is incorrect or there is something scandalous going on in the reports of the Environmental Protection Agency. I don't see any other conclusion. After I talked to Bob Howarth, I went and talked to three other faculty members at Cornell who are in one way or another concerned about global warming and do that professionally. And again, I have to emphasize that I personally know nothing really about that. It's outside of my field of expertise. And I can only report that the three that I spoke to were unconvinced by the evidence that Howarth is giving, all three of them. None of them, by the way, was Larry Kathless. These are three other people that I talked to. So that's all I have to say. I won't pursue this any farther, so I just wanted to tie up that discussion from my point of view.
Thank you, Peter. I've got Carol, Pam, and Mike.
I wanted to second Pam's endorsement and announcement about the South Hill Civic Association, and it's the meeting with the students. I have been attending those meetings since the upcoming districts will change, and the whole group is just a very dynamic, interested group that gets involved and in a lot of issues in the city in particular, and has really made an effort to outreach to students in the area and deal with the dynamics that happen when you have the permanent residents and the visitors for 4 years living here, and to engender understanding. And in that vein, I would also announce that it is Tuesday, September 10th, the College Town Neighborhood Council will be meeting at St. Luke's Church, which is in College Town, from 4:30 to 5:30 in the afternoon. There's active participation on the part of the university, people from the city, and people from the neighborhood. The mayor will be speaking at this particular meeting, and so there is also an attempt to work from the very, very beginning of the year to engender communication with the new kids moving in. So I encourage people to come who are interested, and particularly those who live in that neighborhood.
Thanks, Carol. Pam?
Well, I have a slight correction. The brunch is going to be on the 8th of September, not the 9th. And it starts at 11:30. It's at that beautiful home on Hudson Street. It was Veralma's. It was a bed and breakfast for many years.
211 Hudson.
211 Hudson. And anyway, I just wanted to make that correction.
Good. All right, so people will show up and not the day after.
That's right. I was looking at 2012's calendar, so it didn't work.
Thank you, Pam. Mike, and then Dave.
I mentioned a couple of things about the Civil War Commission. On the 24th of August, there was an event that the Civil War Commission co-sponsored. It was really primarily a Sons of Union Veterans event at the Trumansburg Cemetery, in which there was a dedication of a flag and a new stone on the grave of Civil War veteran George Ehle, E-H-L-E. And Mr. Ehle was the last surviving veteran of the Civil War from Tompkins County at the time of his death. And it was a very nice function, very, very well done, the typical salute and the plane of taps, etc. There was a full Boy Scout troop there. There were many people that came to see this event. And there were probably 6 to 8 descendants of Mr. Ehle who were there. So it's something that we were pleased to co-sponsor. This coming Saturday, there'll be another cemetery event, and I hope folks can come out for that, at 9:30 at the Newfield Cemetery. And this is a Tompkins County Civil War Commission event in which we will honor a person who was killed at Gettysburg, Captain Gregg, who was probably a hero as much as some of the other heroes who've been historically mentioned. He saved the right flank during the various charges by the Confederacy. Hopefully we'll get a lot of people to come out for that and to see that. It's going to be one of the first events of the Newfield Old Home Days as well. And one other event, hope you folks can think about coming to one of them anyway. Our county historian and co-chair of the Civil War Commission is Carol Kamen, as you all know. Carol has written an historic reading called The Language of War. And what she has done is brought together readings from a local perspective. They may be letters that have been written from soldiers. There are events that have to do with the nurses and discussion about them. There are newspaper articles. There are home front events going on. There's a poisoning, believe it or not. And what's going to happen is the commission itself is going to read this. We're going to take parts. And the first performance, I don't want to say that we're refined actors or anything like that, but we're going to perform it at the Southworth Library Lincoln Center on September 11th. And we already have a second invitation for this January to Ulysses, the Historical Society out there. And we're hoping to have invitations for other places in the towns and city. The library would like us to do it as part of their display that they're going to have next year. And it's just something we think we can have some fun with. It's about a 40-minute reading. And please try to make one of them. Come to Dryden if you'd like. We'd be pleased to have you do that. And help us commemorate the things that were happening here in Tompkins County 150 years ago. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. What time is that at Southworth?
Let me check. I think it's 7:30. 7 o'clock. Marcia's prompting me. Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you, Mike. Dave.
Yeah, I'd just like to extend the invitation to everybody to come to Newfield Old Home Days this weekend. Parade is at 11 o'clock on Saturday. Chicken barbecue, quilt show, various entertainment. Everybody's welcome. Come on out and have a good time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Anyone else? Kathy Luce?
Thanks. Everybody's looking forward. I just want to look back for a minute. This last weekend was Labor Day picnic. I'm curious how many of us here were able to attend. I wasn't able to, but I heard it was a success. And one of the things that was intriguing about Peter went. That's cool. And I know there's a couple other members here. I heard that because of the rains, it was feared that it was going to be washed away, so it was held inside. And that the Cornell Organization for Labor Action named the Goat of Labor, which this year was the Students Against Sweatshops targets the Gap and Old Navy because of their intransigence with regard to employing sweatshop workers in Bangladesh and other areas where there have been fires and tragedies, in hopes of prompting them to come up with more humane ways of housing their workers and possibly bringing some jobs back to this country. I wasn't aware, though, and I'm going to sort of ask because I think I figured it out, who is the hero of labor? And if nobody wants to tell me, I'd be willing to guess.
Lenny Hockman.
Yeah?
For 20 years of creating and then pushing and implementing the livable wage template that is used by over, 90 businesses and organizations in Tompkins County. And Carl Foyer gave a very eloquent speech documenting and going over how she started this and how effective it's been. over 20 years.
Thanks. I was hoping somebody would have some comments because Labor Day picnic has always been a very important part of the community, and I was sorry to see that there wasn't much coverage of Labor Day or the picnic in our local newspaper, but really happy to know that some of us attended. Was there something today? There was an article yesterday.
Article in the paper.
There was an article yesterday, for sure, that I thought was not very timely. Anyway, I just wanted to say that it was good and is always good for us to take some time aside to honor labor and to honor those who work so hard to see to it that the working conditions and the wages of people all across the country and really the world are improved, that it betters the lot of not just working people but everyone. So salute to labor, if late.
Thanks, Kathy. Jim and then Peter.
Yeah. Thank you. Just a short note about the Labor Day picnic. Stanley, and I'm losing the second dude that comes.
Milton.
They received plaques at the Labor Day picnic yesterday, and Stanley gave us 3 or 4 minutes on living wage and all those sorts of things. So, and he never ceases to not mention his TV show that he wants us all on. So it was an interesting meeting, interesting picnic that I saw some of my other colleagues there also. So they did a good job. The weather seemed to be okay to me, by the time I got there. So it was good.
Thank you, Jim. Peter?
I was just going to say what Jim said, namely Stanley brought down the house. He made a very, very effective speech, I thought.
I have a question. Does anybody have the date of Porch Fest? That's
September
coming?
15th?
Okay.
Let me look it up real quick. I think it's September 15th.
It's at Hickory College. Okay. That is a fantastic Fall Creek event. People should. I thought somebody would plug it. The 15th?
Yep.
Sunday the 15th. I would also, if there are no other legislators, before we go to our presentation, I would also point out with gratitude that our microphones are working. Thank you very much, Jim, and all the and I believe the consultant and Graham from Graham Gillespie from Holt worked very hard to fix that technical issue in our first meeting. The mics are great. I would point out to all of you that they're on and voice activated always. So during breaks and before the meetings start, at least I can hear all of you who are chattering at your desk. So, or hear you unwrap your sandwiches. So please be sure to move your microphone, say, away from this position if you're not trying to talk to the room. I appreciate that. And then I would also just say that I believe we have about 4 times as many people sitting here and watching as we used to be able to fit into our other chambers. And y'all look pretty comfortable, so I'm really delighted that you're here. So with that, I'd like to introduce Jean McPheeters, president of the Tompkins County Chamber of Commerce.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome, Jean. And do we want to have Bev or Cassandra come up as well?
Yes, we please do.
Bev Chin and Cassandra Aiken from the Health Planning Council.
And I'm going to try to stick this thing in here.
Okay, while you do that, I forgot something, which is, Frank, I'm going to ask you to introduce Joe Negley.
Jean and Bev and others, would you give me 5 minutes? Before
yes, and we can get our things set up. That'd be great.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce Jonathan Negley, who is the new director for the Soil and Water District. John, would you come up to one of the microphones there a minute while I embarrass you? John is an 8-year veteran of the Soil and Water District. He's been the conservation technician all this time. Some of you have seen him in other capacities. In addition to providing administrative oversight and design services to various departments in the county, he's been closely associated with the planning department because any of you that have had creek damage or needing that kind of work in your districts, John's done the designs, and he's also helped garner the funding, the grant funding, for those various projects. He's been invaluable these last several, seems like years, right, Joe, in helping us. Pat has had an opportunity to work with him. Pat is the other representative, as am I, to the board of directors at the Soil and Water District. Pam has served. Dooley has served. We've had some others around this table that have been up there. John takes over the reins officially today, so he moves from one chair to another, and he's a Cornell graduate, lives in Dryden. Where's Mike Lane? There you go. He's in Mike's district.
Doesn't everybody?
He agreed to do one of the parts in the Civil War presentation at Southworth, by the way. So I thought it might be a good opportunity, since some of you have had a chance to work with him, not just in that capacity, but you know that this has been an ongoing discussion for the last several years. I think it's appropriate to thank Joe and Jonathan, Dave Squires, and Rick for the work in helping us pull various things together up at the district. Pat, before I ask John to say anything, would you like to add anything?
I'd just like to second what Frank has said. I think he's done a very good job of summing up. We've had an opportunity, we being the board, have had the opportunity to really get a close look at John's work at the district. And I think it's fair to say that the entire board is very supportive of this appointment, without exception. John has done yeoman's work to help us through these recent months of stress, and we feel very confident that he's going to provide the kind of leadership that we need to take the next steps in moving forward now for the district.
It's all yours, John.
Well, thanks for letting me address the body here. I just want to say, you know, thank you for everything that you guys have done for the district. We want to be able to have a better communication with you guys moving forward here, and I just want to be able to strengthen and renew the relationships with a lot of the various county entities that we work with, and just be able to provide the services that a very functional soil and water conservation can provide to the county here. We expect excellence from our staff, and we want to be able to provide that to the residents of the county here. So we just thank you, and I look forward to tackling the challenges that lie ahead, but also the bright future that the Soil and Water District has. So thank you, guys.
Thank you very much, John. We're delighted to have you and to meet you, and thanks for coming tonight. And you're more than welcome to stay, but we really, really appreciate the work that you've been doing and that you will do for the district. Thank you. Okay? All set? Yeah. Jean?
Well, hi. Good evening, everyone. I like your new house. It's really beautiful.
Thank
Actually,
you.
Actually, it's really nice. Thank you for having us here tonight. You've met Cassandra Aiken and Bev Chin from the Human Services Coalition. Both of them have already gone to training to be navigators, and I'm about to go next week and learn this. As you know, the Chamber had a contract for about the last year and a half to learn about the Affordable Care Act and do presentations so that people would be more up to speed on it, and we've now decided to move on and become navigators so that people can go through. But I want to go through this, and then fairly quickly, for those of you on this side, if you came over here, you could see the PowerPoint. Can you see it?
You can see
it. Oh, really?
Why?
It's Jim. From here, I can't see it.
They're working on it. It's supposed to show up there, too.
Okay. Well, if you want to go this way, you can. Anyway, so here we go. So the Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010, and there really has been a coverage crisis in this country. We've had 50 million in the U.S. Without health insurance. And most of those people work at least full-time jobs. So there have been enormous barriers. As a chamber exec over the past 14 years, I've seen the cost of health care rise probably 300% easily. You know, every year somebody comes in and says, hey, it's only going up 12.5% this year. And I'm supposed to be thrilled with that because last year it went up 17%. So it's really been difficult. We have about 9,000 people in this county without health insurance, and we're trying to figure out how we're going to reach them in the coming 6 months. So let's look at that local impact. That sort of breaks down where it is. Baseline underinsured people that have, many of those people we believe will be able to get Medicaid or Child Health Plus or private coverage, and we expect in the next year to begin to cover about 4,500 people, we hope. So here are the mandates. Every person must be covered by health insurance. And there are a few exceptions if you're imprisoned or if you are a Native American, or there are about four people in the country who have a religious exemption. That's about it. So if you're over 65, of course, you're eligible for a Medicare. And there has been a big improvement in the ability to get on Medicaid. But people have to go out and try to find health insurance. And every business that has 50 or more people has to provide access to health insurance for its employees. If you're over 200, you actually have to actively enroll your employees in a plan. And then your employees can opt out. I could, for instance, you know, if my spouse worked somewhere at Cornell and I worked at the chamber and my spouse had health insurance that covered both of us, I could then opt out or something like that. But you actually, and the county will have to do this, you'll have to actively enroll all of your employees in health insurance. Then there's this issue that the insurance must be affordable, not costing more than 9.5% of gross family income. And that's a little difficult to discern because you, of course, only know what your individual employee earns. You don't really know about gross family income. So it's a little bit of a difficulty. And the plan must cover this level, what's going to be called the bronze level in the plan, about 60% of the cost of benefits. What are the essential health benefits? Every state that decided to do their own plan and the federal government figured out what their essential health benefits were. It covers these 10 things. And in New York State, one addition has been made where it will cover health and dental insurance for children. I think it's up to age 12. Is that right? I think it's up to age 12. So, which is a great addition. So it's sort of the regular things that's been in anybody's health insurance plan. So what are the benefits that have already existed for businesses and some that are coming on? If you have a small business that has fewer than 25 employees, you've paid 50% of the premium, your average salary is less than $50,000, you can get a tax credit for up to, and it's a very sizable tax credit, it's up to 35% for a for-profit business and 25% for a not-for-profit. How you may ask, do not-for-profits get a tax credit? It gets taken off the payroll taxes. And those credits have been there and available, and I've been delighted that the work that we've been doing at the Chamber has enabled a lot of people to get them. Are some people not having these? Do you want one? They didn't get passed down?
They passed down. I don't know what happened.
Okay, there you go. But one of the differences is that starting in 2014, you've got to buy through the exchange to get the tax credit. And buying through the exchange provides more insurance. Like, for instance, as a small business at the chamber size, we've got about 14 employees, meaning that about 7 people took health insurance through us. We were really only able to offer one product. So the nice thing about an exchange is a very small business could offer a variety of products now. You could offer a product at the gold level and at the silver level and at the bronze level and let your employees have more choice. So that's, I think, a really good benefit to businesses. For individuals, these tax credits, there will be tax credits for individuals, and I will go over this sheet in a minute that explains how those tax credits will work. It's going to be based on income. It's not available if you have the ability to get insurance through your employer. And then there was something else, Cassandra, do you remember? Don't you love that? So what was that, Cassandra?
There's also cost sharing reduction, which is a percentage off of co-pays, co-insurance, and deductible costs for people at a certain rate of the federal poverty level.
Hey, it's an interactive program here. Yeah, so so that it's hard to explain that exactly, but there'll be more to come. So where to get insurance? You're going to get it through your employers in the same old normal way that people have gotten insurance for a long time. And you can also get it through agents and brokers. In this state, there will be a insurance agents can get a commission. The difficulty will be, and it's still not entirely clear to me, if they'll be able to get a commission for an individual buying. And that I hope that I will learn more about when I go to training, but I haven't had that answered yet. Through a thing called the Health Plan Marketplace. Last week there was a big hoo-ha announcement about this, and basically we got a new logo. And I'll show it to you in a minute. Hold your excitement. So sole proprietors, of which there are an enormous number of people, have been getting insurance through the business, through business insurance. Now they're going to get insurance through the individual exchange. That's a big difference. And then there's this that you can get it by phone through state call centers. You can get it online. You can get it from persons with assistance from a navigator. And that's what we're going to be, as navigators. This is the logo. How come no one is cheering? This, I cannot tell you how exciting this was. But the best part is that there is actually a website. And if you go to that website, you can get to a calculator, which I think will be the thing that is most interesting to people. So if you look at this sheet, and I have a few extra here that I can pass around to the back. Because people are wanting to know what it costs, right? And this is double-sided. So let's start on the side that says at the top, single person earning $18,750. So on this calculator, you're able to enter and play around with what it looks like for a family. So you put in how many adults you have, the number of children who are over 19, the number of children under 19, your family members. You put in, they then calculate a percentage of federal poverty level, because there's a tax credit available if you earn up to 400% of the federal poverty level, which is approximately 44,000 something for a person of, for a family of one, and 94,000 something for a family of four. So it's a pretty good range of you get a tax credit. Then you go.
The credit is about, so 44. You said 40% of federal poverty.
400%.
400% of federal poverty is the number
up
that
to
you
that
said.
You get a tax credit, okay. Right? So for this, for instance, this person it comes in at the 163.19% of the federal poverty level. You've put in your county. You then put in bronze or silver or platinum or gold. And what do those mean? It's platinum, gold, silver, bronze. It represents 90, 80, 70, and 60% of the actuarial cost of benefits. This is what it means. If you get a platinum level, you're going to pay a high premium, and you're not going to have to pay as much out of pocket. If you get a bronze level, you're going to pay a smaller premium and pay a lot more out of pocket. The details, you have to really look at the plans to discern. But that's the essential meaning of this. So I just played around with this and said, in my mind, the single person earning $18,750 was a 28-year-old, pretty healthy person, okay? And I said, so this person will get the bronze level. That means that their estimated advanced premium monthly tax credit, it's going to be $338.29. And the great part about this tax credit is you don't have to wait till the end of the year when you file your income tax to get the tax credit. It's applied monthly as you're buying the insurance. So for this person, there are three plans available in this area, in this county. American Progressive Life, which essentially would cost this person $34 bucks a month. Excellus Blue Cross and Blue Shield, which would be $12. And the MVP Health Plan, which I think would actually cost them nothing. So that's, you know, that's pretty good. On the second side of the page, you've got a single parent earning $35,000 with two children under 19. For this person who comes in at 254, at 179% of the federal poverty level. And I chose a silver plan, so it's higher. It's a higher level. Their advanced premium monthly tax credit is about $254. Their premium rate would be somewhere between $189 and $224 a month for all three of them. So that kind of shows you the ranges that are out there. But if you want to play around with this, you go to that website, which is New York State of Health, and you'll find a great lot of information there. So newyorkstateofhealth.ny.gov. Okay. So when does this start? The marketplaces are going to open on October 1st. The websites are supposed to be up and live on October 1st. Our office hours as navigators will start then. The period of buying insurance will be from October 1st to March 31st, but the insurance doesn't start till January 1st. So people can go and start and look and decide what they want. And they can even decide in March, retroactive. It's not, the insurance won't be retroactive to January, but they can buy through March. So, what's the insurance like? Very similar to the plans outside the marketplace and available now. As I said, it's in all those levels and catastrophic levels for some people. All plans are not offered at all levels. What's offered in Tompkins County? These are the only plans offered through the health insurance marketplace. But there isn't actually that much out there outside of the marketplace, really. You know, it's just we don't have a lot of different companies. How much will it cost?
Some of these questions as we go on.
Sure.
So go back. All right. Now, does each of the four different levels, or
yes, they could offer up to the four different levels. They don't have to offer each level. They have to offer at least the silver level. So. But that's how that works.
Thank you.
How much will it cost? That's those numbers again, and where you can go to look at the premium estimator. Why do you purchase through the marketplace? You can only get the tax credits that way. It also lets you know in one location whether you're eligible for Medicaid or Child Health Plus. It's the one portal for everyone system. And as I said before, choice. Who can help? The IPA navigators at the Human Services Coalition, at the Chamber. The Department of Social Services has wanted to be some kind of an assister, not necessarily a navigator. Is Mary Patricia here? You are. But you said so far they haven't said yes or no.
Right. We submitted our
Patricia, can you go to the microphone?
Submitted our letter of intent to be application assisters. We're not allowed to be, by law, we're not allowed to be navigators. So we've said we want to be assisters. We've signed up for training, but the state has not gotten back to us about that. But we have plans to send people to training in Albany.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And STIC, which is the Southern Tier Independent Center, sort of similar to the Finger Lakes Independent Center, they're going to be doing this for a number of counties, and they are planning to open an office in this county to help with this navigator. So what do? We're going to go to learn stuff. Cassandra and Beverly came back with a three-ring binder about this thick, and that really was only focused on the individual market because the stuff for the business marketplace wasn't quite ready yet. I mean, we don't want to peek too soon on this. and then we're going to explain the levels of insurance available. We will not tell you which one to choose. We are not able to do that. We probably are able, but it's against the law, so we're not going to do that. But we're going to guide individuals through the process. So we'll help people who either don't have access to a computer or just find the entire thing confusing. Who are our local outreach partners? You. We hope that you'll guide people who ask you about what's going on with the healthcare law to us. We hope that county and municipal government departments will do the same. Healthcare providers will, I'm sure, be telling people about this. other community-based organizations, the media, and many, many others. There will be, I think, a media avalanche pretty soon about all of this. And people, I'm actually starting to get, though I have held presentations for the last year and a half, I now suddenly am getting a ton of email every day saying, I never went to one of those, but now I have a lot of questions. So so there'll be a lot of information out there. There, you can go to more information to this site. You can call one of us, and we thank you for letting us come and speak to you. And we're here to answer your questions.
Thank you so much, Jean. Cassandra or Bev, did you want to add anything before we go to questions?
I don't think I have anything to add. I think Jean covered it pretty well. Thank you.
We're free for questions.
Okay, great. Thanks. Pat.
Thank you. Very nice presentation. Thanks for coming. If there is someone in the community of, let's say, modest income who currently is paying their own individual insurance at a very, very high premium, would they be able to switch to this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, I have a second question, too. I still don't understand this business about the tax credit estimate and how that works. How do they get that tax credit?
If someone came into one of us and said that they wanted to apply for health insurance,
uh-huh.
We're going to sit with them as individuals, and it will be completely confidential, and we will ask them their name and their, you know, demographic information and their social security number. The website will hook up with the IRS website, and we'll go back and look at their 2011 or 2012 income, and it will say, what do you expect to earn this year? So there'll be questions about income, and it will be sort of bounced back to the IRS to see if that's in the realm of possibility, or if it's, you know, incredibly different. I think they'll probably get questions, right? Mm-hmm. And then they will say, who else is in your family? What are their incomes? You know, there'll be a lot of these sorts of questions, which will determine what the tax credit is. And so then it's based on that 400% of, if you're under 400% of the federal poverty level. So as I said, if you're a family of four and you're earning less than $75,000 something or other, you will be eligible for a tax credit. And so if you're buying as an individual through the exchange, that it will calculate that, and it will look at the insurance you choose, and it will then take that tax credit off of the premium on a monthly basis. And I still don't know how you end up paying. Does the money get sucked out of your checking account, or what happens?
No, I believe that that exchange takes place between the plan and the individual enrolling into the plan. So you could be refunded through tax, and they will bill the individual. The navigators do not take any money. But just to add a little bit to your question about the person currently with individual insurance, certainly people that have incomes above 400% poverty can also shop through the exchange. They just wouldn't be eligible for tax credits. So someone, you know, currently paying an individual rate is probably, through the direct market, is probably paying a premium of over $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the premium costs through the exchange will be a lot less than that.
Okay. Yeah.
Frank.
Jean and Bev and Cassandra, thank you very much for doing this. Under the Affordable Health Care Act, parents are permitted to keep their children on their policies through age 26.
Mm-hmm.
How will that be handled, assuming now that the child also has an income? Is there enough information out to describe that type of situation?
I think if you went to this calculator, it wouldn't really be able to tell you that here, because it doesn't have a place for, you could put in taxable income as a family, but I don't think it really will work very well. If you're, as I understand it, if you can keep a child on until age 26, even if the child lives out of state, even if the child has other opportunities to get health insurance, if you think this is less expensive. In New York, that's until age 29. We have a special law. But it is a little more complicated. Under this law, your child How does this work? Your child, if your child is offered health insurance through an employer elsewhere, you can't get a tax credit. Is that right? I think that's right.
I'm trying to remember. We had a lot of discussion about this at the training. And there were some unanswered questions. Every day we amassed a number of questions that they turned and presented those to the Department of Health. And that was actually one that we didn't get full clarification about. But my understanding is that if you have it doesn't really change for people who aren't getting tax credits, you can still have your child on your plan up to age 26 as dependent. And because of the age 29 rule in New York, it's a little bit different once you get past 26.
Yeah, it's a little more complicated.
But it should remain as that. So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Peter, then Carol.
Yeah, well, thanks for trying, but I couldn't follow most of what you're saying.
Sorry.
No, it's not your fault. It's mine, or maybe it's just too complicated.
It's really complicated.
But there's a couple of questions that I've asked a number of people and never gotten an answer. And I'm referring to the criticisms that are made of affordable health care by those who oppose it. One is it's going to be a train wreck. And let me take that one first. I don't know what they're talking about when they say that. The only thing I can imagine that would be a train wreck is that nobody's offering plans through the what are they called again? The
exchanges.
That would be a train wreck, or that it's so complicated that nobody can answer any of the questions that they ask. You know, how much am I going to get, or what's it going to cost me, or I don't know what. So is that it? Is that what people mean?
Well, I think there are a couple of other possibilities. One is that the entire computer system crashes mightily, which I think I'm sure that there are people working on right now to make sure that doesn't happen. But you can imagine the complexity of people entering data and hooking this up with the IRS database and trying to get information back in a very timely way, because it's supposed to be pretty instantaneous. Can be very difficult. I remember helping my husband apply for Medicare, and you didn't get an answer for like a month. So I don't know what the difference is going to be. That's one thing. And also, I will tell you that New York State has put a lot of energy into this because we are having our own exchanges. A lot of colleagues in states that are on the federal system, and in those states, often the governor is not behind moving this plan forward, and there is no information out there. So the kind of work that our chamber and other business organizations and others have been doing across the state to begin to inform people about that has not happened in many states whatsoever. And so it's going to be, I think, very difficult starting, if there isn't much more information out pretty soon, to get people to understand this and get into the system. Now, no one has an expectation that every single person is going to get into the system in that 6 months. But there is a good 6 months there for people to go and try to get into the system.
Okay, thanks. That was my first question. The second question that that I've never gotten an answer that I understood to was, one of the criticisms one hears by opponents to what I can only call Obamacare, I'm sorry if it's...
It's okay, he calls it that too.
is that this is going to result in 10 million jobs, 9 million people who now have health care losing their health care. I've heard that many, many, many times. Do you have any idea what they're talking about and what sense that makes? I mean, the only change now is that now people are required, employers I'm talking about, are required to have health care. So why?
I think I might have some insight, which is that when the law was first came out, there were a number of larger businesses that said...
Jean, step back from your microphone a little bit.
I can step back. Be yeah. here. Shall I speak in a kind of a Tallulah Bankhead voice?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I was just on a radio show where I had to, like, eat the microphone. about an hour ago. Anyway, thank you. If you have a business between 50 and 200 employees, you have a mandate to offer health insurance or to pay a fine. I didn't go into that here because it wasn't really relevant. I think there was a belief that many people operating businesses of that type were going to just get out of the healthcare business because the fine is $2,000 per person with the first 30 people not charged. So if you had a business of 100 people, you take away the first 30, you have 70 people, you pay $2,000 each for them, $140,000, that may be well less than you're already paying for health insurance now. So I think that that was part of the belief. I have that, and that was the first reaction that I got from a large number of businesses, and then they thought about it and said, you know, the reason I offer health insurance is it helps me keep good employees.
Yeah, I mean, the reason they're paying, they're offering health insurance now, I mean, now they can get out of it and pay no fine, but they're not
right.
doing that. So
right.
why in the world would...
I can't explain the reasonings of the human mind.
Okay, all right, thank you.
But I don't see any other reason.
That makes sense.
Carol? Yeah, I have a few questions also. Did you say that individuals are going to be getting the insurance through a broker? So is the broker required to be involved in this transaction?
No, I said that individuals could get insurance through a broker, or they could get insurance through an exchange.
And
but the question is for, I'm not sure if individuals, if brokers will be compensated for helping individuals with insurance anymore. And so that's the issue about where, you know, like if I went to my broker and said, help me get insurance, and he said, I'm not getting a commission, please go away. So
then there's the simpler site. Okay.
Yeah.
So I will say that I have had recent experience looking on the Social Security website, and it was I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it's not that difficult.
It's instantaneous, and they update my information every year, and it was accurate. And there is a template out there, maybe that or an example that this maybe can work. Although there certainly could be glitches as it starts up. The date that it makes sense for us to start reaching out to people and saying, you really ought to check this out.
October 1st.
That's October 1st.
You could do it, you know, the last week of September or something, but we're not going to be live and answering questions really until then. And I think that you'll be taking appointments through the 211 number.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know when you're going to start doing that exactly.
Probably.
Yeah, October 1. We have been getting phone calls from the community about the exchange, and we certainly answer to the best of our ability at this point. So
it would be helpful to have, in the form of an email, mm-hmm. summary information, maybe now, for us to send along to constituents who are asking, here's where you're going to get information and mm-hmm. here's when to do it, and then maybe one with more information as October 1st comes for us to make sure to get out to people helpful.
We will definitely do that. We would have loved to have had something available now, but we have to have some of that information communications approved by the our contracting agency. So we'll have that. We will be making those up, and we will be distributing to you and a number of other people so you can give those to your constituents.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Jim, then Mike, and I have a few questions.
The answer to that question, can you get it from New York State Health?
Right. Yes.
New York?
Yes, you can. There's a lot of information on that site. It's very interesting.
Those are some generic. We passed out some generic flyers that are helpful for START.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mike?
Let's say I work at a job at a fast food, never have had health insurance, maybe I'm a single parent or something. I've heard about this being able to be insured. What do I do? Where do I go first? What's my first step?
Well, if you worked actually at a fast food place, you're very likely that you're going to be offered health insurance if you're working more than 30 hours a week, because most fast food businesses that are chains are going to be required to offer health insurance. And it's going to be at that 30-hour-a-week mark that you get that offer. So because if you have more than 50 employees, that's how that works. And, you know, most of them are chains. So, but otherwise you're going to get a lot of stuff in the media that begins to ask, that we hope that will prompt you to call places like us or get on a website and look, or ask questions of your physician so that you get referred. That's pretty. There'll be a lot of television advertising we hear. There'll be a lot of radio advertising. I can give the best example, I think, is probably Massachusetts, because that's the only state that has sort of gone through this. So what happened in Massachusetts? A lot of people enrolled, probably about 40% of the population that was enrolled in the first year. They think it would have been higher, but they actually never went to the business community and asked for their assistance in that state. The other thing that happened is emergency rooms were flooded at the beginning of the year. That's because if you don't have health insurance, you probably do not have a relationship with a physician. So I would urge everybody, if you don't have a relationship with a physician, now is a really good time to get that, because if you have some kind of a chronic condition and you haven't had health insurance, you're going to show up at an emergency room, which is the wrong place. You know, an emergency room doesn't handle regular care. But that's where people are going to show up, and that's going to be flooded, and it's going to be very hard to get into family health care providers because we don't have a sufficient number of them. So it's a good time to make that relationship now, make an appointment for January or February, and get going. I know that doesn't totally answer your question, because...
Well, in fact, it made me even question more. If someone's out there, why do I have to have a relationship with a health care provider?
Right.
Can I just go to the doctor I want to go to?
Yes, you can. But I'm saying you can't go to a doctor who, when you call, says, I don't have any openings. I can see you in 4 months, which is very likely what you're going to get. And that's going to happen in a lot of places. So that's why you need to have that relationship. You know, make an appointment now. You can make an appointment now for February, and that would be fine. I think the other thing that's going to happen is many people are not going to like pay any attention. Let's imagine a 22-year-old man, okay, who's not married, not paying attention, lives far away from his mother, not paying attention. He's going to find out when he files his IRS form, and they say, so where's your health insurance? And he says, I don't have any, and he gets a fine. That's how that's going to happen. I have to back off again, don't I? Okay. So that's, you know, I think there will be plenty of people who don't. What are the fines? The fines are $95 for the first year, or 1% of your income. I think it goes up to about $400-something in the second year and $600-something in the third year.
$325 the second year and six
something.
I can't remember what it is, but
it's the third year.
Yeah. And it's, you know, if you have a family, it's 50% for the spouse and children.
Who does the money go to?
Well, the money goes to pay for this health care system. It goes back to the government. Because, you know, the whole concept here is that more people will be in the plan, and more people, and many of those people won't need insurance, but that more people will be covered.
So that relationship, Mike, in other words, it just means that a lot of doctors don't have any room for new patients. So
right, get on the rolls.
It may take you a while to establish somebody as your primary physician. It doesn't mean you don't have a choice.
Right.
It means if you want to have a choice, you better start looking. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I can ask a couple questions and then we'll. So if I could. Now, I was interested that Patricia, the DSS, is not actually doing this because so let me ask, are you, the three of you, I go to one of you and you can sign me up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the insurance company that I pick, they'll call me, and then that we.
It's all going to. A lot of this is going to be done by email, as I understand it, and there is an ability for everyone to get a Gmail account as one of the ways of getting information. But yes, they'll be. You'll get contacted by the insurance company then.
Okay, and once I sign up with you, am I covered, or is it not until that transaction happens with the insurance company?
Transaction has to happen with the insurance company.
And they're actually the effective date, depending on when in the month you sign up, will affect when you are actually effectively covered. So I believe it's like early in the month, you might be covered the first of the next month before the 15th. And if you were to enroll after in the second part of the month, then you'd be covered the first of the following month.
Okay. And
Technically, you would really be enrolling. We would just, navigators can only assist, so we couldn't really enroll you per se. So we could just give you the information, just like with Medicare plans, and you would select the plan that you want and enroll. We would just help you with navigating through the portal.
So then you help us, and then the next step is up to the insurance company to reach out. Okay.
Correct.
So the person doesn't have to go to yet another
Right. So one-stop shopping.
So if my income is low enough that I qualify for Medicaid, can you sign me up for Medicaid?
Through the portal, you'll be just directed to that same, to the Medicaid site, and exactly the same exact thing that would assist you through that process.
And Patricia looks like she has something to say.
Well, I just wanted to clarify that, our relationship is going to be very fluid because there will be people who will be Medicaid eligible, and that's a very complicated application process. So there'll be people coming into the navigators who are probably better served by talking to Medicaid because they also might be eligible for food stamps or some other kind of program that we run. So this relationship is going to be very tight, and it won't work if we're not really on the same page.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think we will work together. We are prohibited from saying to Patricia, John Smith came in to see us and you should talk to him. But we can say to John Smith, John Smith, you should go and speak to DSS because you will be eligible for more things if you go there.
And just another point, and not the complicated, but there are certain populations that we really wouldn't be able to enroll, and that would be the over 65, people with a spend down, and what they call the non-MADRI population. These are people for whom the eligibility is not based on that modified adjusted gross income. It's based on other income types of requirements. So we've been talking with Patricia for the last few months and figuring out just how the referral process could work.
But the individual doesn't have to know that I qualify for Medicaid or
right.
I qualify for a subsidy
right.
or I
That's
don't
right.
qualify for a subsidy.
Right.
They just maybe say, I don't have insurance.
Right.
So, for example, Tompkins County's employees, we have insurance.
Right.
You don't have to do anything?
Yes, you do. Every employer has to send to every employee by October 1st of this year something that says you have insurance, this is the insurance you have, or you don't have insurance, and just to let you know, there's a form that's there. I'm assuming your HR department is right on top of that, because that has to go out by October 1st of this year.
I'm not seeing nods, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
But somebody doesn't have to know where they fit. They go to you for that. Okay.
Right. But the form that they get is supposed to be something, I have to say, it is extraordinarily badly written. I mean, I thought, oh, my God, when I looked at it, this doesn't actually inform anybody of anything. It looks like it was written by a committee of, I don't know. I'm not going to say bad things about any particular group, but it was a very badly written piece of paper. But what the purpose of the piece of paper was to be to try to say to somebody, yes, you have insurance, or no, you don't have insurance. I could have written it much better, much more quickly, and made it less stupid, but sigh.
All right. I have just one other question, but I've got Will, Carol, Patton, and Frankie after my one other question, which is, you talked about the 22-year-old lives far from his mother, not paying attention. give us the nickel pitch here for why young people really should do this, and because we're going to, you know, if we want to be your ambassadors, or,
right?
You know,
hey. First of all, if you're under 26 and we have family insurance, you know, let's just put you on the insurance, because that's probably going to be better insurance. But if we don't have family insurance, I'm a single mother, and I'm just getting, I only have my own insurance, and it's going to be a lot to go to family. You could get insurance. You're only earning $20,000 a year. You could get insurance for $40 a month. That's one dinner out, kid. You know, and if you get in a really bad wreck, or if you have appendicitis, or if you break your leg, I can't cover you. You know, you have a responsibility. You're an adult. That's my pitch. I've never been a mother. I have no idea if that would work.
That sounds good. That sounds good. All right. Will, Carol, Pat, Frank, and Brian.
Well, I, in my 20s, managed to leave a job and go one day without insurance, and managed to do severe damage to a toe. And I was stunned at how expensive a toe can be. Who knew? So I certainly convey that. Jean, what I'm still trying to understand is Martha's question, which was, if you already have insurance, you are well insured, is there any reason to do anything?
No, you're fine.
You can just,
if your company is going to continue to offer insurance and you'll get something from your employer that says whether or not they are, then you're fine. Unless, I think this is really an issue for people who have not had insurance at all, or have been individuals who got like insurance for $1,047 a month. That's a big pitch. That's what they need to know.
And secondly, you talked about the potential rush for people wanting to get providers. I can already speak to that. My physician retired, and it literally took me months to find somebody right now who was willing, who was taking new patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's a question maybe for Sandra or whatever. You know, is there a shortage? Is this just locally, or is this happening? And is it anything being done to get more general practitioners in our community?
I think that's actually a bit of a hospital question, a general question. I believe Massachusetts did have some problems when they first started, because they didn't quite have enough primary care doctors to take, you know, to do that initial well visit.
Yeah.
They've been talking about a bit of a primary care shortage in particular, mm-hmm. and actually some specialties as well. So there are some provisions in the Affordable Care Act to expand primary care, and I can't recall what all those are, and I'm not sure exactly what is happening here locally at this time.
Okay.
So. Just a follow-up. One good point is, for someone who typically has not been connected with medical providers, if they choose to enroll and compare plans through the marketplace, there will be a list of participating providers for each plan, and it will actually state whether or not those providers are accepting new patients. So that will be a resource for people who don't have any connection to medical care right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm not sure if there'll be a long-term problem, but this is sort of like, you know, the rat going through the snake is going to be a big glut at one point.
Thank you.
Carol.
Yeah, I'll just share my pitch to my kids as they aged out, which was younger. Somehow they started requiring, my employer at the time offered health insurance at up to 26 as soon as my kids turned 26. And now my kids are just turned 30, and so now they would have been able to stay on until, 29, you said? But my pitch to my kids was, if something happens to you, I love you, and I will not leave you lying in a hospital by yourself or without being able to get the care. So I'm going to have to go into hock for hundreds of thousands of dollars to take care of you, and you don't really want me to do that. So you have to have health insurance. So they kind of got that. The library. So if people are going to have to sign up for this and stay in touch by email, we have a lot of people here and in many places who do not have broadband or internet connections at home. And we hear, I saw Susan Curry back there, we have heard that they have a lot of extra business at the library of people coming in needing assistance to do things on the computer.
I assume that's true for our rural libraries as well. So a good connection would also be to make one there,
yeah.
Make sure that maybe there's somebody at the library chain trained, or you have hours at the library.
Not everybody can
like
get
that.
Trained. And the difficulty about hours at the library or any other place is confidentiality. So I do think that people will be, there'll be some people who'll just come in and want to sign up there and do it themselves. So I think there will be a rush to look at look at those kind of services available. But the hard part about moving around is that maintaining confidentiality.
And they don't have to have an email address or internet access to sign up. They're really pushing the idea that they'd like to go paperless, but they offer phone assistance mm-hmm. where they'll verify someone's identity over the phone, and they will communicate by mail if you do not have email access or you prefer not to. So they're accommodating for different situations.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
And I think that and people don't have to sign up in October.
Right.
Right.
Through March, right?
Right, through March, although if you want to be covered right away, certainly you have to the 3 months. Pat?
Mine was covered. I was going to ask about the email access.
Okay.
We have literally millions of people nationwide that don't have access.
That's true.
And I did, in answer to Will's question, I did read an article that said that this is expected to be a serious problem nationwide, that we don't have enough primary care providers,
mm-hmm.
and nobody has an answer for it.
Well, a lot of emergency rooms have started to break things down so that they've got some urgent care, like we have our urgent care clinic. So
mm-hmm.
instead of the high-level emergency care, there's triage, and there's a different level of care. And people, I think providers will respond.
I think we're fortunate here in Tompkins County, but I suspect that it's going to be a serious problem.
I think that's right. Frank?
I didn't plan to say this, but I will anyway. We have a shortage of primary care physicians in this county. We have a shortage of gynecologists in this county. We talked about it at the meeting up at the health department last week, and it's a song some of us have sung since some of us have been directors at the hospital. So it's been going on a long time. Go back, two questions. Go back to Carol's question about the email access. I thought I heard you say that the insurance companies, once you've decided, the insurance companies will contact and stay in contact by, they'll set up an email
account. They will set up an email account if you want to, but there are other plans.
They will use other means
yeah.
for all of the reasons Carol mentioned. Some of
right.
us have been really concerned about that.
Yeah.
The other is, did I hear you say that you're not going to be dealing with people who are 65 and over, the
right.
reason being that they theoretically should be eligible for Medicare?
Yes.
And Medicare recipients from an earlier discussion we had are not eligible for this anyway.
Right.
It's
they can purchase a plan on the exchange, but doesn't really make that much sense because they would be paying already for their Part B, and then they would be purchasing a plan.
Right.
They wouldn't be eligible for the advanced premium tax credits. So whatever plan they bought would be paid in full. So.
And subset B, you've just done a half-hour presentation here to us and gotten a dozen, 20 questions. Are you going to take this show on the road anyplace else, or are you going to wait for people to contact you?
Well, I've been doing this show for 15 months now in many, many places, but the problem was I didn't have a lot of information, so every time I did the show, it was a different show. I will probably set up 4 or 5 more in between now and mid-October, then I think it's going to be come on in, you know. So I'll probably do things at the chamber again for that. And the Health Planning Council is having Troy Ochsner.
Right. September 9th?
Yes, next Monday. We have Troy Ochsner, is that how you pronounce
Ochsner.
It? From the Department of Financial Services Insurance Department will be coming for a special presentation that's going to be at 12 noon at the Rice Conference Room. And he's a great speaker, and he'll give an overview of the exchanges and how they'll be and just how they'll operate. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you can make it to that. I know we are also planning to conduct a number of different outreach sessions with some of our community partners. So if you can think of a place that you'd like us to speak to a small group, just let us know.
Who is your backup? If Jean breaks her toe, as Will did, and you're out.
I have two other people who on part-time staff who will be trained as navigators. You have Cassandra.
Is a full-time person, and she's our primary navigator. And Betty, Balco, and I are also trained as backup. And people don't have to use a navigator. I want to emphasize that. They can certainly, if they were computer savvy or felt comfortable, they can certainly go on a portal on their own and enroll by themselves.
Right.
Thanks.
Okay, and before we end, I'll have you give you, your contact information is
on the bottom.
The last slide. Okay. But the question was about public presentations. So there will be, if we can even have the information about any public presentations, we can. I'm going to ask here if Marcia could get that on our website so that we can help people to get that information, too.
I'll get them to Marcia for the ones I'm doing.
Great.
And the September 9th presentation is on the handout that went around, and we'll also give it to Marcia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the evening is going to really matter to the public.
Yeah.
Okay. Brian?
Yeah, thanks. This comes from the world of unintended consequences. And you have full-time employees now, and because of this, they are now working 3 days a week. They're scheduled for 24 hours instead of 40.
Mm-hmm, that's possible. I do. I mean, I think that is possibly an unintended consequence. I also think that it could affect a company's desire to grow. Because when you get over 50 and you hit the mandate, I think there will be some companies that will desire not to grow to that.
Yep.
So that is an unintended consequence, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And Peter?
I just heard something that I wondered if it was correct, that if you're on Medicare, then you can't be part of the system. I'm on Medicare, and I have a supplementary insurance, private supplementary insurance,
uh-huh.
Because I understand that Medicare has a cap of some sort. Is there there's nothing like that offered in the exchanges? I get it with my employer.
Right. No, there isn't.
Huh.
Your situation right now would stay the same, and you would need to.
Right. But I wonder if somebody else can't get that, huh?
Not a supplemental plan. No.
Okay.
You can certainly double cover yourself, but you probably wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. It would be a bad financial decision.
All right. Any other questions? Well, once more for the public, to dial 211 would be a good place, one-stop shopping, to find out where to find a navigator. That's the simple answer for people. Also, the website is nystateofhealth.ny.gov. And Health Planning Council, 273-8686, or the Chamber of Commerce, 273-7080. And I really want to thank all of you for taking this on. And I know, Jean, you never expected to be an expert in health insurance.
Yeah, but, as a navigator, you get a really nice hat. So
that's very important. Very important. And it's really a great service to the community that you've taken this on.
Thank you.
And all three of we really appreciate what you're doing. And everybody hang on tight. I think it'll work out. We expect there will be some bumps in the road, but, Rome wasn't built in a day. So
thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. All right, for my report, very briefly, I'm going to get the screens to go up. Thank you, Kathy. A couple of very quick things. Nobody mentioned the Ellis Hollow Fair, which is this coming Saturday from 12 to 5, the best white elephant sale in the county, and lots of other good stuff. I'm also headed next week to the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council meeting. We'll be talking about a number of specific projects as well as the applications for the next round. I had the opportunity today to be up at Cornell University in Stocking Hall, where there was the newly renovated Stocking Hall, which, if you remember where the Dairy Barn used to be, it's that really big new building with all the big windows and stainless steel stuff inside. It's really fascinating. Senator Chuck Schumer was there announcing a proposal that between Cornell and he's pushing to create at the Ag College a national food safety hub for dairy products. And this is, I guess they have food safety hubs for other kinds of products, other kinds of foods, but not for dairy. And in other words, that would be kind of the national center for training, for research on food safety, and for not just students and grad students, but for people who are in the business to learn the latest research on how to keep our food supply safe. So it was very exciting, and it is an amazing facility. So that was one little thing I got to do today. I have some appointments to the Workforce Investment Board. These are chair's appointments. So Jack Lance, Lisa Patz, Lisa Holmes, Martha Trumbull, Mark Coldren, and Lee Dillon. So those are mine. That's my report. If there are no questions, go to Joe Mariana, County Administrator.
Thanks, Martha. Just a couple of things. Good news. Karen Baer, our new Director of Human Rights, began work today, so she's with us. She's moved into the community. Her son is enrolled in the Ithaca School, so she is a part of our organization beginning today, and that's great news. The other good news that we received over the past week, and I'm unaccustomed to talking about good news, so if I look uncomfortable, it's because I haven't had any practice at all over the past couple of years. But the state comptroller released the new pension rates for next year, and they're actually going to be below the rate for this year. So our pension rate for this year is 20.9% of payroll. rates will go down to 20.1% of payroll next year. So the first decline in pension rates since, I think, 2009. I'll remind people that it wasn't that long ago that they were 6.9%. So 20 is still pretty high, but it's less than what we had expected. With wage growth factored in for next year, because that's the other adjustment, it looks like we will have pension stability in the 2014 budget. That's pretty important. It also gives us an opportunity to bring in a recommended 2014 budget that will be able to achieve our priorities that we talked about at the budget retreat, that also funds some critical OTRs at a levy increase of less than 4%. So I wanted to kind of adjust your expectations about the budget that we will be able to bring you in 2 weeks with a levy that I believe at this point will be less than the 4% that we had talked about a few months ago, again because of this rather significant change in the assumptions that underlie our budget for next year. So we will be presenting 2 weeks from tonight that budget. You will begin your budget reviews a week later. I think it's on September 23rd. We'll have lots of opportunities to talk about the details behind this budget. But again, because of this pretty significant change in the assumptions that we've applied, I wanted you to know tonight that it looks a little better for next year than we had thought. And that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Really, thank you. Any questions? Great. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Just one small item. I just want people to know that we did close on the K House, so that's no longer county property. It's now owned by an individual. And I have nothing further to report.
Well, Mic went away.
Did people hear that?
No. Start again.
Okay. Well, what I reported was that the closing took place on the K House up at the Biggs Complex, so that's now no longer county property. It's owned by a private individual. And that was all I had to report.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Finance Director Rick Snyder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to present the July 2013 sales tax report. It's on page 5 in your packet this evening. Sales tax distributions for the month of July were up 1.76% compared to last year. Total distributions for July were $4,363,000 compared to $4,288,000 last year. The county's portion of sales tax for July was $2,454,000 compared to $2,412,000 last year. Year-to-date tax distributions for the county portion total $18,212,000 compared to $17,960,000 in 2012. And this represents an increase of 1.4%. And that's all I have for this evening.
Thank you very much. Is that kind of on target with where we want it to be?
It's below where we have budgeted, and we have looked to putting together next year's budget with probably not using 1.4% of an increase, because when you take into quarterly adjustments and some other factors, we're probably going to estimate this year's growth at 1.15%, and that's what the county administrator is using in formulating next year's budget.
Frank.
Rick, I was hoping you'd go to the next tier on your sheet. Can you say very quickly that there will also be an increase and what that might be for the local towns and the other municipalities because of the increase in the sales tax?
For next year?
What's on the sheet here for the quarter?
Well, for the towns and the municipalities, like, yes, if we'd like to look in at that section, the city of Ithaca year-to-date is coming in at 2.08%, and they're the highest of the groupings. But the municipalities year-to-date are coming in at year-to-date at about 0.8%, which is even lower, which is lower than the county.
But an increase nonetheless.
But an increase nonetheless, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Rick? Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
See, I will. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right, I'll go through the consent agenda, and then I'm going to choose, I think, perhaps if we go to through the public safety resolutions and then go to the library report. I think the library report will probably take some time, and maybe the public safety can go more quickly. All right, consent agenda, please let me know if you have anything you would like removed. Resolution A, ID. Okay. Resolution B. Resolution C, ID 4330, award of bid upstream Forest Home Drive Bridge over Fall Creek, Town of Ithaca, PIN 3950.41. Resolution D, ID 4331, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement for construction, inspection, and support services with Erdman Anthony, upstream Forest Home Drive Bridge. Do I have to say all the bins? No. Okay. Over Fall Creek, Town of Ithaca. Resolution E, ID 4327, budget adjustment to transfer unanticipated revenue from sale of equipment, Highway Division. And Resolution F, ID 4324, tax roll correction, Town of Ithaca. And Resolution G, ID... Okay. We have a motion on the consent agenda. Moved by Leslin, seconded by Pat. All in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Any opposed? Those are unanimous. So I would go to Public Safety Chair Brian Robison.
Thanks, Martha. We did meet on August 12th. However, I'm not going to go into the details of that meeting because everything that we talked about is represented through resolutions that we have before us tonight. I would like to change the lineup just briefly, or just minorly, and go to J first. As soon as I find it.
Package page 25.
Could I ask a question? Is it possible to combine I and J into one resolution?
That's the way it started. And if you would allow me to explain, I will do that. Resolution J, ID number 4316, authorizing the use of contingency funds to support the additional costs incurred by OAR to comply with new state legislation governing charitable bail organizations. And I would move that.
Second by Kathy Luce.
Dooley, in answer to your question, I requested that they not be put together for the sole purpose of this would be the second time since I've been on this legislature that a resolution of the kind in Resolution I has come before us asking for supplemental funds for the actual bail fund. And I requested that simply because we need to have some sort of a historical record as to how many times such a request occurred and if it's folded into a different subject, which Resolution J is. Resolution J is a totally separate, it's a brand new law. And it is separate from this. So it was on my request that we separated these two issues. Having said that, one of the things that we need to do with J is there's really no reason to have the whereas contained in lines 15 through 17 because they're contained within the other Resolution I.
They should be.
Yes.
But they're not. Not in my copy. So that's fine. If that's what you're going to do, I understand.
Okay. Yeah, that should have been taken out. And also, because it is a new state legislation, and maybe I'll leave this up to you, Dooley, we need to insert somewhere within this resolution what the legislation is that they're referring to. And I did a little bit of research today, and somewhere in here, this is all pursuant to Article 11 of the insurance law. That's where one could go to find the reason that we have to do this resolution. The long and the short of it is they are now making organizations such as OAR be licensed through the state, and all the agents of OAR singularly have to be licensed. They have to be fingerprinted. They have to take an exam. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a money grab, but, you know, I'll leave that up to you, your own interpretations of it. The function of OAR is not going to change. It's just that now they have to be licensed through the state under that article of law. So we can either, my suggestion anyway, is to put pursuant to that article of the insurance law in the title after organizations, or we can massage it somewhere in this resolution. It should point to that.
To Article 11 of the insurance law, I mean, that's the language we need to add?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. I've got Carol, okay, Kathy, then Carol, and if somebody wants to add, identify where the language changes should go, that can be up next. So, Kathy.
Thank you. I was happy to second this, and I don't have any problem with separating these into two resolutions. I think it's great to be able to keep track. It's actually, in my opinion, kind of an indication of the success of OAR as a program, because most of us know that it saves every time we are able to utilize this fund. It saves the county a tremendous amount of money, and it helps people get back into their families and communities. What I understood, and this was my question, is 15, 16, and 17 don't belong in this resolution, and some of y'all are suggesting that it be removed and later it will be added to the other resolution. And if that's true, I don't know what the other changes are, but I'm happy to move that in the business about Article 11 of the insurance law going in after the word organizations as a friendly amendment.
I'm asking.
Yeah.
Well, since it's us.
Okay.
So. I don't think it's just a clarification. It's not a substantive change, so I don't think that's a problem. Or if someone sees another spot in one of the whereases that it can go in, that's fine too. It's just something that you can point to if someone were to ask, rather than just simply stating new state legislation governing this.
All right, so there are two parts to Kathy's suggestion of a friendly amendment: to delete 15, 16, and 17, and in the title, after the word organizations, add...
Line nine.
Kathy, were you saying under the title? I thought you said under the title.
Into the title was what I heard suggested. I'm open. I'm just trying to move this along. Article 11 of the insurance law could be inserted somewhere after organizations in the title, for example.
To comply with new state legislation, I think it might go there under Article 11 of the insurance law governing charitable bail organizations.
Sounds good. That's actually what I was suggesting.
Okay. Got that, Kathy? In the title, to comply with new state legislation under Article 11 of the insurance law. I don't know if that sounds technical enough, but Deb, is that right? Okay. Kathy Luce, do you want to also have it in the body, like on line 14?
How about on line 9?
Line 9.
New York State recently enacted legislation under Article 9 of the 11 of the insurance law that creates new financial.
Great.
Okay. Okay, that is good with you, Brian.
Yeah, I wasn't going to get into this. Wordsmithing. I thought you guys could have fun with this. I don't care where it goes.
And who? I can't remember who seconded. Okay, then that would be friendly to you. All right. I would point out that we didn't have any revised resolutions in our packet, so this is I guess what has to happen. This is fine.
That's true.
Why would you say that?
I don't know. Okay, so that's that part of it. Any other discussion on the resolution? Frank?
Brian.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry, Frank. Carol was next.
Oh, I was going to attempt to do what Kathy just did. The only other thing I support this, and I would just add that if staff later finds that there's some bill number in the Assembly or Senate, that I'd trust them to add the number in the appropriate place as well.
Okay.
Do I need to move that?
No. Okay. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Brian, because this is in reaction to this recently enacted state legislation, first, we're to assume that OAR does not have any money in their budget to cover this on their own. Should we anticipate this as an annual expense? Because some of these things may require the OAR staff to stay abreast of certain things, like like licensing. Is this a cost that we're going to be asked to bear each year?
I think I can answer that. But you're welcome to come up because you're probably going to have to come up eventually anyway. So, this is basically start up to comply with this new law. And in that, you have an application fee. You have each one would have to take an exam. They're going to have to go to Syracuse to take an exam. They're going to have to be fingerprinted. Those are all costs that won't be recurring costs unless staff changes. Each time, if someone were to leave staff and someone else were to come, then they too would have to be fingerprinted and licensed and so on. And there's really no way of knowing that right now. But yes, in answer to your question, there will be some additional costs going forward, but we don't know what they are, and I'm not totally sure that we can even budget for something that we don't know. But this seems to be, and I'll defer, but this seems to be sufficient to comply with the new regulation now.
Deb, would you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you did perfectly.
All right. Any other discussion? Okay. This is a short roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
Thank you. Now I'll go back to Resolution I, ID 4336, Appropriation from Contingent Fund, Bail Fund Program, OAR.
And seconded by Carol. First, I'm going to go to Jonathan.
Oh, I was just going to fill it in. It's Chapter 181 of the laws of 2012.
Okay. All right. It'll help Kathy with where that goes. All right. Thank you very much. Pam.
So I would move that we insert the lines that we took out of the last resolution into this resolution wherever Brian sees fit.
Is that a motion?
Yes, it's a motion.
Second by Pat. That's a lot of power, Brian. I don't know.
What if I don't see fit?
Well,
we vote on.
Lines 10 and 11.
Okay.
No, that's fine. That's fine. No.
After line 10 and 11?
It could be part of line 10. It could just get longer.
Okay. So we could just make the third whereas longer and add the information from the other resolution.
So it says, whereas OAR has provided bail fund assistance to 36 clients to date in 2013, and whereas OAR has...
And has also advised
the county that because of high levels of activity, the bail fund is not adequate to meet anticipated demands for assistance. The whole resolution is a request.
Consider it friendly is just a separate whereas. It becomes a run-on sentence.
All right. So, all right, Pam, is your suggestion to be a separate, just move that in, perhaps after the third whereas?
Sure.
Okay. And, Pat, that's okay? Okay, good. All right. And, Kathy, you had a question about what Jonathan said?
No, I'm okay. I don't have a second on the resolution.
The second on the on. Resolution I was moved by Brian, seconded by Carol. Okay, good.
I consider it friendly.
Okay. Any other discussion on I? Frank.
Brian and Deb, are you up there?
Yeah.
I know that one of the arguments... or positive arguments for the bail fund is the cost avoidance for bailing out, boarding out. But can we get some sort of an accounting as to how much? It seems to me we had a request not too long ago to enhance the bail fund. I mean, there was a question also that some of the magistrates were not returning the money. And can you bring us up to date on where we stand on the fund itself? And secondly, does OAR take an administrative fee out of the bail fund accounting?
Well, I'll start with the first question first. And that was basically, we haven't come to you for 2 years now. It's been, we were last here 2 years ago for the bail fund. So far this year, too, we've also, it's increased to 44 bails we've done this year from 36 since this resolution was first introduced. In 2012, we saved the county $425,250 in averted board costs. Now, the other question I think you asked, Frank, and maybe I've forgotten, is we have, right now, the reason I'm here for more money is that we have over $34,000 in circulation right now out in bails that has not been returned to us yet in 2013. We have 10,000 that has been returned to us. And since I asked for the we're down to our line of credit making bails. So we desperately need the $10,000 if we're going to continue to make bails. Now, regarding the magistrates keeping the fines, keeping the bail in payment of fine. We still have an occasional problem with that, but we have been sending letters to the magistrates and CCing the county attorney on those, and I believe the county attorney has issued a couple letters, and we've gotten our bail back in record time after a letter was issued by the county attorney. So I think that we're beginning to see less of the abuse of bail for the payment of fines. Regarding an OAR administrative charge, each bail incurs a 3% court fee. The courts put a 3% surcharge on each bail we do. 4 years, 5 years ago, we instituted a 3% administrative fee for OAR, too, which goes into our client services fund. It doesn't go into general operating fund. We require that 6% non-refundable from our clients whenever possible. That doesn't come out of county dollars. We do waive that 6% in the case of severe indigency. But generally, we get the 6%, the 3% for the court, the 3% for OAR, from the clients or their co-signer.
Thanks, Deb.
Any other discussion? Dooley.
Could you explain to me how you get the estimate of the amount saved?
Yes, I do. I think we've gone through this a couple times, but the estimate, the way we do it, is we round it. I mean, this is not anything that's firm, but I think it's pretty good when you look at the data. We calculate it at $90 per day, the cost of keeping someone in the jail, times 75 days, which is the average amount of time someone is, our clients are incarcerated prior to disposition. Now, I do have a report that I'll bring to you all or send it to you via email that actually shows 75 days is pretty modest. In 2012, there were a lot longer times than that. For instance, in the city of Ithaca, it was 155 days before things were returned to us. Bail was returned to us. It was 278 days in Enfield. So that 75 days is a fairly modest, number. And so we come up with each bail saves approximately $6,750.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Peter.
I've probably seen this data before, but I've forgotten. Do you give us reports annually on how much money is lost in the bail by people that don't, not the amount that goes into a different fund, but by people who...
Forfeit.
Forfeit, yeah.
I give it to the Criminal Justice Alternatives Incarceration Board and Public Safety frequently as part of a larger bail report. Just before the vote tonight, I can tell you in 2012, $2,750 was forfeited. And that's out of 69 bales that were made. That's what was forfeited in 2012.
And what's the nominal amount of the bail fund?
I don't know if I understand what you're asking.
Well, how much money is if how much money have you got to give out bails?
About $44,000. If you take
so
the
this
10
5% sort
the,
of
the
yeah.
10 that has them. Yes, it's less. It's about 5%.
Okay, thank you,
Pam.
Well, I will give my pitch again. I think this is a tremendous value for the county. We save so much money with our costs in paying for the cost of having somebody incarcerated. And it helps the person who is innocent until proven guilty, that their lives are less disrupted. But I think it's very much in the county's interest to keep this bail organization going as strong as it can, because we would have to come up with that money. If OAR was not here, that $400,000 plus would be money that we would have to take out of our operating funds. And I think that we should be very grateful that OAR is in existence. So I hope that everybody will support this.
All right. Ready to vote? Another short form roll call.
Mrs. McQueen Claiborne?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? All right. That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Resolution K, ID 4322, appropriation from General Reserve Fund for purchase of STOP DWI fully equipped road patrol vehicle for the Tompkins County Sheriff's Office STOP DWI program. And I'd move that.
Seconded by Dave. Discussion. Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, will the activities of this used for this vehicle be just alcohol-related DWI, or will it be out actively looking for a drug DWI?
Don't know that.
For
Michelle?
For both, drug and alcohol.
Two
people trained in the DRE program.
That's good news.
We've been looking for DREs for quite some time, and we finally had two, one deputy and an officer, that were chosen to go into the DRE program. It's a very tough program, and they both successfully finished up in Arizona a few weeks ago. So, yes, they'll be using that vehicle.
Glad to hear that.
Just as an aside, it is my understanding, anyway, that this vehicle will be fully equipped with anything you would ever need to effect a DWI or DWI drug arrest. It will not be part of the regular fleet that you see out every day. The hope is that this vehicle will be around for a long, long time, just for stop DWI details. And one question that I did have, and I don't remember if I asked it before or not, but This is going to our sheriff's office, but there are other departments throughout the county that do similar activities. Will this be available to them, or as a supplement to whatever details they have going?
This will be used by Tompkins County Sheriff's Department only. It will be at roadblocks, which other agencies may be at, so the equipment in there could be used at that time. But discussing with the governor's traffic safety, it was decided that the sheriff's department was the best department to give the vehicle to at this time because of the high visibility throughout the county. And if this works out, maybe another vehicle to another agency at some point down the road.
Okay. And just for the folks that may be listening, this is $40,000. That actually comes out of fine money. Is that correct?
It's fine money. It's no county money involved.
Yeah.
Carol, Jim, Peter.
Yeah. Well, first, I can't really see the people who stand at that mic, and I don't know if it's that great for the cameras. I can see them at the other
mic. Michelle, would you? I think this light is a little better. Or come sit at the table.
Yeah.
Okay.
When it comes to the
thank you. So I have a question about what you just said. So does the city of Ithaca or the universities, does the university have one of these vehicles available, or would they be able to use it if they...
No, they do not have one at this time. But we're hoping down the road, if this vehicle works out, we will be able to purchase a second vehicle for another agency at some point.
But that wouldn't be for the city, though. It would be for one of our...
Possibly.
When you say another
city.
Agency, what do you mean?
It could be Ithaca Police Department. It could be Cornell.
Okay.
It hasn't been decided.
Okay, thank you.
Jim?
That was going to be my comment. The last three people have been at the microphone, basically been in a closet. And I was going to suggest, before we get our altar over there, that we move that microphone into the light or have them stand over here. I mean, it's ridiculous that all these people are standing in the dark.
All right, we'll add that to the punch list.
Thank you.
Building for the room.
And I love the picture on the screen in the last presentation.
What picture?
There was none.
Oh, yes. That's also on the punch list. Sorry. Thanks, Jim. Peter.
I believe, or it's my understanding, that the patrols that take place with this vehicle are not done by, it is not at the expense of the ordinary road patrols. This is all done by extra money that is paid overtime to the people who drive it. Is that not correct?
Some of it will be overtime, and some of it will be just the regular DWI patrols that they would do.
Oh, so that detracts then from, road patrols that are, the road patrols that are done routinely, is that right?
What this car is going to be used for, That's good. What this car, as Michelle said, is going to be used for Stop DWI patrol, which is funded by Stop DWI for the most part. But it will not be used for normal road patrol. But there are times, Peter, when we have people come in that are working the regular shift. If it happens to be a quiet night and the sergeant so deems, one of our extra officers could go out and patrol for DWI, and they would obviously use that car at the same time. But for the most part, it'll be done under the grant money that's given to us from Staff DWI to run extra DWI patrols. So.
Okay, thanks.
Carol.
Yeah. So can you tell us anything about where the highest incidences of drug driving or driving under the influence of drugs
I'm not prepared to do that right now, Carol, but we surely could track that.
I'm not asking where you patrol. I mean, you know, it's
It varies throughout the county. We had 156 DWI arrests last year for the Sheriff's Department. And it varies in different places. But obviously, because of our tracking system through Spillman, we could give you a breakdown of where those DWIs are.
I have that breakdown. I just don't have it with me. I've been keeping stats for the last almost 8 years, and I have all that breakdown.
Maybe you could send that.
For each district, yes.
You could send that to Kathy, then she can distribute to us.
Sure.
Great. All right, we ready to vote? Another short roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Can I talk about it for the next 40 minutes or so before I say yes?
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Anyone who wishes to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Thank you. And you have one more.
Yes. Lastly, Resolution L, ID 4315, authorizing an amendment to the 2013 through 2017 capital program to add a project to renovate the public safety building to add jail capacity and provide a sheltered outdoor recreation area at a cost of $900,000 and execute a contract with Labella Associates for architectural and engineering services. And I would move that.
Seconded by Dave. Before we go into this, I'm going to let the library people know that we're going to take about a 10-minute break after we finish this resolution, and then we'll come back and do the library. Okay. Go ahead, Brian, and then Dooley.
Okay. I'll say a few words, but in the meantime, this was actually the concept of this was derived by Under Sheriff Osborne and Sheriff Lansing, and I'm sure there's going to be some questions, guys, if you want to come up, and Ray also. But you have to, you can't be in the closet. You got to come up in the light. If you would, please. I mean, not that we need to, but I will say that from a historical perspective, I think we could all agree that maybe in hindsight, the jail was not built big enough back when it was built. We've been operating on variances for at least 10 years through the State Department of Corrections. There actually was a couple of years where they didn't see any movement from us as to adding to the capacity of the jail, and they pulled those variances. And when I get done, I'll have Sheriff Lansing. He knows all too well what those costs were, but they are significant. Labella Associates did this preliminary work because they were already there. They were looking at another capital project that we have going currently with the roof and HVAC and so forth. So at our request, we had them go ahead and take this concept and give us some drawings. And hopefully most everyone has seen through each of their committees the design of this new phase. It will add 7 new dormitory style beds. It will not necessitate any additional staff. And if we took, and I believe we did, if we took an average of 5 board outs out of these 7 that this may avert, and tally up the costs of that, this project will be paid for within 5 years, just from not having to board people out. It will also send a message to the State Department of Corrections that we hear them, that we are trying to take steps to increase the capacity of our jail. And still with that, obviously we are hoping that the variances that we currently have will stay. I will say that I think the variances are somewhere in the neighborhood of around 20, and start adding up the costs of 20 board outs a day, we would be, the tax levy would be in a real world of hurt without it. So with that, I'll go ahead and defer to these folks as to any other history and anything else you'd like to say about the project.
As Brian alluded to, we lost those variances in 04, 05, and 06, and it was $500,000 for the first 2 years and $903,000 for the... So $2 million we had to pay in board outs in 3 short years when they take those variances away. It has been noted that by Brian, and we have heard it, Joe also heard it during the county administrator's meeting, that the state is looking at this very seriously, and they're not afraid to pull the variances, just to send a message. I've been able to talk to number 1 and 2 at the corrections level in Albany, and they've assured us so far that what we're doing is something they like to see. So.
I'm just going to make a comment that I beg to differ with you, that we didn't build the jail big enough. We maybe didn't build it well, but I think the removal of the variances in those 3 years was actually a punitive measure, not really, and born out of a policy that was a conscious policy at the state level, honestly, to create jobs by facilitating and promoting jail construction where it wasn't needed, and jails for counties were overbuilt so that the state could empty out their facilities and close state prisons. So there's some background. There's somewhere a couple big books about about that study, and a particular policy was driven those board outs. I beg to differ about the sort of actual fundamental real question of whether our jail was the right size or not. So I think that's, I just don't want to let that hang out there. I think this is a great response to, in a relatively small way, to increase our capacity, especially because it doesn't increase staffing. I would point out that the construction, I think the last meeting where we talked about the construction project for the new jail, the price tag was $20 million, and almost on their way out the door, consultants said, this doesn't even include the increased staffing this design would require, and the cost of that staffing over 20 years would be well more than the cost of the building itself. So whatever disruptions there had been, whatever expenses on board outs for a short period of time, that was a policy that was, I think, flawed, and I think we made the right decision. And this is a follow-on good decision. Mike.
Well, there's two sides to that, and we weren't necessarily going to have to build a whole new jail. We could have put a new pod on, would have brought us up and would to an area of about 128 beds at that time, would have saved us a lot of money in the long run.
The commission wasn't satisfied with 120 beds, so Kathy Luce, then Jim.
I'm not going to do a big history lesson except to say I served on some of the same committees with Martha at that time, and the cost of operating the proposed new jail was going to be huge, whether it was empty or full. There were counties all around us rebuilding, building on new jails. As Martha said, while the state was emptying theirs, it was clearly an unfunded mandate, passing costs down to the counties. And we made what was at that time, I think, a difficult and principled decision not to enlarge a jail to a size that we didn't really need that much space at that time, when we knew it would put us, make us dependent on other municipalities and counties sending to our jail inmates that they couldn't house. And many communities did that at that time because they were hard up for bucks. I could go on and on, but the short version is I agree with Martha on this one, and I was there.
Jim.
So was that?
Jim.
I'll do short history. I believe we got back the amendments. What do we call
it? Variances.
Yeah. The variances in 07, and they continue to this day. And I think this project, at least to me, may solidify us being able to keep the ones that we have. And so that's one of the main reasons this project makes sense to me. But it was a tough time prior to most of us coming on the ledge when those kind of numbers were floating around, and we were lucky enough to get and keep those variances. So.
And I would say that getting variances replaced or reinstated didn't have to do with any change in our operation. It had to do with the change in Pat and Carol?
Well, I'm just wondering, it seems pretty clear that the seven additional beds are not going to meet all of the need that we have. Am I correct about that? And if this does, in fact, satisfy the Department of Corrections for the time being, how long is that going to be? I mean, how much time are we buying here by doing that? Are we going to spend this money now and then turn around again in another year or two? And we're going to hear that, well, we're under the threat of having the variances lifted again. So now we've got to do this project. And it seems like we're doing a real piecemeal sort of thing. And I just can't help but wonder if, this project to some degree makes sense to me, but on the other hand, I'm not sure whether long term this is the project we should be looking at. If we have a serious problem in our jail capacity over a period of time, and I don't know if this is the case, I'd have to see the figures to know. If we have regularly over a period of time exceeded the capacity of what we have plus this 7, and we can expect that we're going to continue to exceed it in the coming months and years, I just have to question whether this is the best direction to go at this point. I guess I can see where there's an argument to be made that this is maybe all we can afford to do right now, but if that's the case, then I think we should recognize that that's what we're doing. We're putting a patch on a problem, is what it sounds like to me. But over the long term, this is not a long term. This is not a solution. This is just it may help, but it's not a solution. And I'm just concerned about how much longer it's going to take until we hear back that, we're glad you did that back in 2013 and 2014, but you still got all these board outs and it's not big enough, and when's your next project going to start? So.
Go ahead.
Yes. If I could. That's a very good point, because even this adding 7 beds to the jail does not mean that the commission is guaranteed to continue the variance forever and ever. I will say, to the legislature that one of the discussions that I had on the phone was they wanted to know this is a good plan, is how they put it, but they wanted to know what the long-term plans are. And I think those are considerations that will be taken in future variances.
Well, and we heard a presentation last meeting, where there was a third phase to this overall project that would involve a little bit more construction and add another 7 beds?
Another 7 beds. It would require the relocation of headquarters, Road Patrol, into a different facility. You could still expand the jail operations within the envelope of the building. Yes. And that will be designed as a part of this. And that will be a sign of good faith to the State Commission on Corrections that we are thinking about the future. It's kind of a build-and-measure approach. We will take this approach. We will add 7 beds. There's a strong business case to be made for this. I think it was made last time. Brian made it again tonight, where we believe we can actually save money on this. The savings we will achieve by reducing the board outs are adequate to more than pay for the debt service that we incur for this. There's a good business case to be made. But again, in terms of the signal sent to the state, one signal is we are thinking ahead. We're not stopping where we are now. We're thinking about what it might look like if we need to expand in the future. So we're not committing to build that, but we're showing them kind of what's in the longer-term plan.
Ray or Ken?
Yeah, if I could. Mike made a good point, even back then. Pods are still, a possibility where you don't have to add on. And you're right, Pat. We don't have the answer when the state's going to say, what more are you going to do? But as Ray alluded to and Joe did, they want to see the movement. And we're showing that, and we're taking baby steps because that's all we can afford. And even that, I know, is a burden. And that's what we're trying to do right now. The pod thing is a possibility, Mike, down the road. They're still using them. But it will take more manpower at that point in time, as Kathy alluded to. So. But we're just going to take the baby steps, and let's hope to make them happy for a while.
There's another issue with the pods. If you expand the population significantly, then your kitchen is not large enough, then your intake is not large enough, then you're really looking at a redo of the whole facility, and that was what we were looking at 5 years ago. I've got Carol, Peter, and then Pat again.
So I've got 2 questions. So what period of time do you anticipate that this will satisfy the state for?
I wish I had that answer. I don't have that answer. I don't know how anybody could answer that, what the state's going to be satisfied with.
What's the time frame that, Joe, maybe you would anticipate coming back to us for the phase 3 or something else?
I think the sheriff answered it honestly and accurately. We don't know. We know the environment that we're in can change. We also know that the state has been questioning us. They see a capital plan, they look at improvements, but we really haven't taken a substantive step forward. So we think this is very much a good faith sign that we can offer them. But I think the sheriff described it very well. We don't know. So the communication that exists between the sheriff's office and the State Commission on Corrections needs to continue. That dialogue needs to continue to make sure that, you know, we're not surprised by a pulling of the variance at some point.
Boy, I came prepared to support this. It just would seem very silly to spend $900,000 now and then 2 years from now be told we would need to spend some much more significant amount that this wouldn't fit into. So I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, are we talking just a couple of years? Are we talking, you know?
If I can, I've talked to Commissioner Beline myself. Since he came in, and I would see him at NYSEC meetings every single time he would show up. He's very accessible, very open. And he, because he started as a sheriff in Ontario County, he's very...
Niagara County, I'm sorry.
Niagara. He's very aware of the pressures on counties. And that's why I made the distinction about that compared to the previous commissioner. He has worked with us. He's always said, look, the main thing is our conditions. Is it well run? Are people being treated well? Are the trustees working out? Is, you know, and did we have other violations? And was always pleased with the operation of the jail. He has, you know, I think he's established this communication with the sheriff and with the, with other staff. I do not believe he's the kind of person to make a precipitous move. If Ken is saying this is working, this is going to work for a while and make us, you know, if we have to see what our population is like, and maybe, you know, maybe it means we have to invest in the day reporting program, not the jail. Maybe it means we have to really do more in terms of the kinds of things we've succeeded in doing to keep the population way below what people projected 15 years ago. I mean, they projected 15 years ago that we'd be up at around 200. Well, we're nowhere near 200. So this is a long-term strategy. My sense of Commissioner Beline is that he is not going to turn around and say, oh, sorry, that's not enough. You've just thrown away $900,000. That if this appears not to work, if we have a sustained explosion, let's say, in population that lasts for a year and we have a real problem, then it will start a conversation. And it's a long-term project to design the solution. And if the solution means moving the civil side out and then you can expand the building, I'm confident he will work with us to figure out the best way to do it. But this is, I think, a very wise investment and certainly is going to last us, you know, a good chunk of time and, you know, maybe another 20 years. Don't know.
So I had another question just programmatically. Was it this phase or the potential next phase that you lose the room that's called the library with the computer? And so what does that mean for programming? And do you have a plan to just give people access or replace?
Most definitely. That's the whole idea, Carol. That would be the third phase of this project, where we would move out along with civil, when I say we, the road patrol, therefore opening up all the space that is on the civil and road patrol for programs and more classrooms, and then on the correction side, giving us more rooms for the attorneys and people to meet and holding cells. So it would be quite an increase for just those things. We would lose nothing, plus we'd gain more space for programs.
We're not losing that room now.
No, not at all. That's to take place, as mentioned, if we were able to find a place for the civil and the road patrol. And Martha, she's correct. Chairman Beline is a hardworking person to make sure that he takes care of the counties. And I'm happy to say that number two that he just hired is also an ex-sheriff. I spoke to him during this project, during Beline's vacation, and he assured me also that they understand what we need, and he's there also to do the same job that Mr. Beilein wants to do, and that's give us as much help as we can to succeed and not fail.
Okay, I've got Peter, Pat, Dooley, Pam, and Kathy. If I've missed anybody, I'm sorry, but I got Peter next.
I think this is what...
I'm sorry to Nancy Oltz, too, in the library, that this is going to take a little while, but...
I think this is what they call a slam dunk. I think that all of this analysis makes no sense whatsoever. Remember, the commissioner of corrections that withdrew the variances is not the same one that's sitting in that office today, right? And he may very well not be sitting in that office 5 years from now, and that's a big thing. There's all kinds of talk now about rethinking drug policy. And that's, frankly, rethinking drug policy would make a bigger change than you might think.
Oh. If you move a little back, Peter. Yeah.
I thought you were telling me to stop talking.
No. I would never do that. I enjoy it.
Okay. All right. There are so many things that you can't predict that it makes no sense trying to extrapolate into something that's 5 or 10 years in the future. This is the low-hanging fruit. This gets 7 beds for very little money and no additional ongoing expenses, and we should vote for it. Believe me, there's no reason to vote against it.
Pat?
I actually had some follow-ups for my first question, but I didn't get a chance to get them in. I think probably I should be clear that by what I said before, I was not saying that I don't support this. But I do think that it's important, not only for our information, but for the public that may be watching and listening and read about this later to get a bigger picture of what we're doing here and why we're doing it, and what we may be looking forward to in the future and why it's going to be necessary. So I just think that regardless of whether we support it or not, we need that this is an important discussion to have. I do have a question that I think we've had this information before, but I don't know if it's updated at this point. Approximately, or what are the figures right now for the number of board outs that we have, and do we measure it by the month, or how do we do that?
We do put together some stats. We bring it to, I think, public safety gets those. I don't have exact figures with me tonight. But I can say that in 2012, the average daily population was 82.
What's our capacity?
Without variance, our capacity is 75. With variance, it's 93.
That doesn't tell me much about the... board outs.
What right, Joe?
What can you tell me about board outs?
I looked at the numbers. They've averaged between 6 and 8 over the past couple of years. They've blipped up a bit, so they're more like 8 on average on any given day now. That's a little bit higher than what we've experienced over the past couple of years.
Okay. Thank you.
You can find 20 sometimes on some weeks. It's very variable.
Very volatile, but on average
I'm looking for an average.
About 8.
Asking about.
Okay. As of today, we had 88 in the facility and 10 boarded out. But by tomorrow, it could be back down to 4 or 5 or up to 15. So it's tough to say.
Okay. Thank you.
Dooley.
Has the resolution been moved?
Yeah.
Yes.
And seconded?
Yes.
I'd like to propose small changes to the wording. I hope they're friendly to you. In the first whereas, line 7, it says it's a dual-purpose facility, but it's actually a multi-purpose facility with 3 different constituents. So if the word dual could get changed to multi, that's one suggestion. Down on line 40, it refers to the legislature's capital plan review. The word committee is missing. Just stick committee in after review. And on the second page, line 8, LaBella Associates has estimated the cost to design the plan to increase the jail's capacity. Isn't that what this extra money is for, just to design it?
Yeah.
No.
No. So I thought the phase two was just the design that was getting done. It was not going to get implemented.
No. This gets a little confusing because they explained it was phase one, two, and three. Mm-hmm. So the $900,000 includes enough money to design and build phases one and two. And that's the seven bed addition of capacity and the sheltered recreational facility outside. It also provides enough money to design that next option, which is the additional seven beds inside that building. The $151,400 represents the cost just to do the interior improvements to the building to create that next set of seven beds. What it doesn't include is the cost to move people out of that space to make way for those additional seven beds. So that's what the $151,400 is. It's only for the interior construction needed for a subsequent phase of the project.
So that's what you call phase three when it was presented to us before?
Yeah, that's phase three.
So this resolution does not speak about phases one and two or three.
No, but it tries to reference in here an additional, the cost of increasing the capacity by an additional seven beds at $151,400. So it's trying to say that's above and beyond what is provided in a prior whereas, that initial seven bed increase in capacity. And that begins on line 43.
The $151,400 is not included in this resolution then as an expenditure?
That's correct. The cost to design that is. The cost to construct that is not.
Okay, so then...
And it shouldn't be.
That's correct.
I'm concerned that on the second page, lines 8 through 10, does still not make clear what that particular amount of money is for.
Could it help to say LaBelle Associates has estimated the cost of constructing the plan would be 151,
yes,
something like that?
Excluding the cost of moving the other two occupants, yes. That I would have understood.
Mark, does this thing should get voted on?
Oh, you mean each change?
Yeah, I haven't heard anyone say it's friendly yet.
Right. Well, she was going to go through it.
I had the three areas. The first one was...
Yeah, well, one and two, the first two were fine. Yeah. Okay? With me, I don't know who the seconder was.
Who's the seconder, Dave?
Dave.
It was fine.
The first two are fine with both. Okay. So we're talking about lines 8, 9, 10 on page 28. Brian, did you... something else about that?
No, I got. I'm still watching the valley. I don't really know what's.
So it's this line 8 on the second page has estimated the future cost to construct the plan to increase the jail's capacity by an additional 7 beds, excluding what's really expensive.
Okay, you know what? I am uncomfortable. If I can throw something in here, I'm uncomfortable putting a number there for a project that we don't even have any guesstimate as to when we would do it, and what's not even in that number at all is the idea of vacating the space and many, many other costs. So I wonder if...
Just take it out.
Just take it out. It almost confuses things even more.
May I?
Yes.
Actually, and I don't care how it... ultimately ends up in there, but words to this effect need to be in this resolution because it sends yet another message to the Department of Corrections that not only are we doing this project, but we are looking down the road at an additional 7 beds. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right. Well, isn't that the whereas above? It says that, you know, there's a preliminary design.
Yeah.
You know what, I'm gonna put a bookmark here and go to the other people who had comments, and I might ask us to try to finish the rest of the discussion, take a break, and come back with language worked out. If that's, we were way past our usual break, and sometimes we get foggy. If that's okay. This is a little bit complicated because I'm worried about sending it, about somebody later looking at this number and saying, what? You're going to say it's going to cost $1 million? I thought it was going to cost $150,000. So this either needs to not have a number or be much more clear about what's not included in the number. So let me do this and go to Pam, Kathy, Jim, and Brian again. So, Pam?
Well, earlier someone made a comment that they weren't sure they were going to support it because if we were going to spend $900,000 now and then we were going to redo the whole thing later, I don't think that we will be losing. This money is well spent. I mean, this money will continue to function if we change and if we move the civilian side out. This change will still be part of the design for the conversion. So it's not a waste of money. This is money that is well spent, and I really hope that we move forward. I'm with Peter on this. I think we should just do it.
Okay, Kathy Luce.
Thank you. I just wanted to make it clear in case in my previous comments I think I left out. I'm supporting this, and I'll tell you the reasons why. I don't exactly think it's a slam dunk. I think the public and other people want to know when we decide to spend money, and they want to hear from us why we supported it. This is one of those cases where, as Sheriff Lansing told us, we can't predict how many people are going to be put in the jail. We can't predict the actual number or even with any certainty an average number of who's going to be put in the county jail at any particular time. But our experience has taught us that our ATI programs are being effective. And so in terms of the previous suggestions that we add on to give it 101 beds or something like that, we still feel, and I think reasonably so, that that would be too much of an add-on. But anybody who's visited the jail in the past 10 years knows that it's in bad shape. It's a facility that needs help just from a facility perspective. But when you consider the three groups that are housed there now, it's not adequate, it's not sufficient, and in some cases it could be said to be bordering on unsafe and bordering on inhumane. We've got to do this. This is a reasonable way to do it. I understand that there's uncertainties, but what this is doing, if I understand correctly, and y'all can help me out here, what we're doing is making an amendment to the capital program. The jail capacity is going to be added to by 7 beds, and sheltered outdoor recreation is going to be added. We're going to move, y'all remind me, which division to be able to have their own space. These are things that needed to be done a way long time ago, and the amount, although it's not minuscule, it's still, relatively speaking, much less than the cost of a new jail. And in terms of when we're going to have to do it again, I think it's long past time that we did something. So I'm supporting this, and in terms of the offered amendments, the first two are fine with me. The last one has just gotten very confusing. I would have liked it the way it was. I understand that there's some lack of considered transparency there, and I'll be happy to hear proposed wording if the majority agrees to it.
Okay, before I go to Jim, Brian, and Leslin, Joe looks like he has an answer.
Well, I don't know if I have an answer, but I have an observation. I've been reading this second page string of whereases, and I do think you can eliminate the whereas that begins on line 8 and then ends on line 10 that makes that specific cost reference. I think you can take that out without really affecting this resolution negatively. The first resolution on that second page talks about that subsequent expansion and how it makes sense to proceed with reviewing it. It then picks up, even if you delete that whereas, by saying, we're going to take a look at it. We're going to go ahead and get this design. So I don't think you lose the message to the state if you delete that whereas that I agree. I wrote it. It's pretty confusing the way it reads.
Okay. Let me ask Ken. What do you think?
I think that accurately would do that, Joe, because
you know, they, we, what we're really after are one and two right now, we've been trying to say, and that would cover it. And that'll take it to the next phase when we get there. We don't know when. So.
Okay, and it's confusing to have a number in that doesn't actually, it's not part of the math of the program. All right, so I've got Jim, Brian, and Leslin.
I was going to call the question, but if there's going to be something taken out, I don't believe I can do that under the rules to call the question and knock off three lines. So if you could do that informally before, then I would call the question.
All right. Looks like Brian has an idea.
Well, no, I guess I'm just asking Joe, because it says in the next to the last, where we're spending $90,000 to look at the potential, that's a substitute for 8 through 10?
No, I think you can eliminate the 8 through 10 and still recognize what we're doing here, which is to design all phases.
Okay.
And we are contemplated. It's clearly contemplated here. It talks about how it's the most cost-effective future approach. So that's why I don't think you lose much by scratching that one whereas.
Can someone move that?
I'd be happy to move that.
Okay. Duly moved. Pam seconds. Is that friendly to Brian and Dave?
Yes.
It's friendly to me.
Okay. Lines 8, 9, and 10 on page 28 are gone. Jim.
And then I will call the question.
Oh, wait. Actually, I shouldn't do that because
you asked me a question.
I asked Brian a question, and then Leslin was next.
And then we'll let Jim do what he was going to do. But to wrap up, let's not forget that this area that we're adding seven beds is a space within the jail that is seldom ever used. And it fits very, very nicely in the pod arrangement that they already have with no extra staff. It's you have a covered outdoor rec area that you never had before, which is quite large. And now I'll ship it over to Jim.
I'm sorry. We're going to go through Leslin first.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Sorry,
I know
Leslin.
You don't want to hear from me. Sorry.
Sure I do.
I have a few questions, and then I have a comment. For the sheriff and his staff, for the benefit of the public, what is the capacity of our jail, not with the variance?
75 beds.
75 beds. With our variance?
93.
So the seven beds that we're adding would cover part of what we're getting as a variance.
No, the variance would stay the same. Just add seven beds.
We're just adding seven beds. So here's my comment. I am never one to add, to build a bigger jail by any means. And no, it's not physically adding a bigger space, but we're adding beds. That's the bigger jail. I hear a lot from the people who I represent and others about, you know, the old adage, if you build it, they will come. I think it's important. I ask those questions for people to understand that we're operating beyond our capacity, what we can hold right now. And we've been given an exception by the Commission of Corrections to be able to do that. But that's not going to last forever. It's part of the discussion you've been having. This is a struggle that I have because I do have to constantly explain to people why we're doing this. Out there in the public, the word is they're building a bigger jail. We're not paying people a living wage, but here we go building a bigger jail. Okay? People equate those things. Spending $900,000 on a jail. We spent a bunch of money here as well. So those are things that require more and simple explanations so the public really understands. Okay? We only can accommodate 78, but we accommodate a whole lot more right now because we have a variance. So we're trying to put beds in, you know, to really try to make sure that we are increasing the capacity to meet what we actually some of what we actually house in the jail. Am I saying that right? Am I saying it wrong?
No, I mean, okay. Definitely. I mean, it would take it up. I mean, 7 would take it to 82.
It will take it to 82, not even where we are in terms of the variance. Can either one of you say what has been the jail, the average number of inmates in the jail, let's say last year, per month?
82. Average daily population.
Average daily, so we're getting right to the point where this is it. It's not that we're looking at adding many, many more beds because we want many, many more people coming in. We're just adding beds that bring us to the place where this is the number we see on an average daily intake, number of people who are in the custody of the Sheriff's Department in our jail. That's important. I felt obliged to say that because I do get those out in public about us building a bigger jail, and I am not one for, you know, just keep building bigger, bigger so we can incarcerate more and more people. That's not where I am. Thank you.
That's very important to lay that out, and specifically if we said our average board out has been between 6 and 8, then 7 is right between those two. If that means that we can, on average, perhaps not board, I mean, perhaps board almost nobody out or very few. And people should understand that it's fluid because of classifications, because of the kind of inmates that happen to be there from one day to the next, the gender, age, you know, the type of charge. So there are complicated calculations. It doesn't necessarily mean, oh, now we'll never board anybody out. It always depends on classifications. So, but this, on an average basis, should mean that we're really filling a gap that right now is being filled by a couple of other counties at significant cost.
We're moving the people from the other counties into Tompkins County, closer to where they live. That's the effect of what we're doing.
That's right. So, anyone else? I don't think we need to call a question if I don't see any more discussion. All right. If we're ready to vote.
We have a roll call, please.
And we need 10 votes to pass this as a change to the capital program. I'm sorry. Kathy Luce. What?
Could you read out what it's going to, with the changes, what we're voting on?
We're ready to vote on the main motion because it was agreed as friendly to take Dooley's first two changes that made in the first line. Dual is changed to multi. Is that right? Is that the word? On the word committee was added to line 40, and lines 8 to 10 on the second page were removed. So that is now the main motion, and we're looking for a vote.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Mr. Robison?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. McKissie?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you all. This has been an important discussion for all of us to understand what's going on and for the public to understand. And apologies to Susan Curry and Nancy Oltz. We do need to take a break, I believe. Brian, is there anything else before we take a break?
I've only got about 15 minutes of... No, we're fine. That's the end of my report. The next public safety meeting is sometime. Next Monday.
Okay, Jim?
I just want the record to show that the county administrator moved that we eliminate lines 8 through 11.
How about suggesting?
All right, we will be back. Please be back in your seats at 8:30. Thank you very much.